You're listening to Utah Lake Facts, Fiction, and Fun, a Utah Lake Commission podcast. Hello, and welcome back to the Utah Lake Facts, Fiction, and Fun podcast. This is Sam Brager, Outreach Coordinator for the Utah Lake Commission, and we are on episode 58 of the podcast. Now, if any of you have been listening long enough, you realize we probably should have been a lot further past 58. We took kind of a break on the podcast while working on a few other projects and things here at the lake. And we wanted to try and get things get back up and going here. So today's episode is going to be actually some audio pulled from our June Utah Lake Commission Governing Board meeting. And in that meeting, Erica Gaddis, who is the director of the State Division of Water Quality, which is underneath the Department of Environmental Quality, did a presentation updating the board on the Utah Lake Water Quality Study. Now, if you haven't heard that phrase before, the Utah Lake Water Quality Study is an effort that's been going on since 2016, 2017 to try to evaluate the various sources of nutrients at Utah Lake, particularly phosphorus and nitrogen, and evaluate the feasibility of a nutrient standard for those two nutrients at the lake in order to reduce the frequency and intensity of algae blooms at Utah Lake. Now, a lot of people ask what's being done about algae blooms, and try to understand that is a very complex matter. So Erica did a great job of summing up some of the research projects that are being done as a part of this water quality study. Now, the study has a very intense framework encompassing a lot of different efforts, and she sums up some of the research projects from 2020 and 2021 that have been being completed in order to find answers to data gaps that were determined earlier in the study. And those data gaps being filled will help inform the decisions of how to implement a nutrient criteria and what the outcomes could potentially be. So let's listen into Erica's presentation, and we really appreciate the chance to share this information with you guys, and we hope this answers some of the questions about what is being done about algae and what research needs to be done in order to provide long-term solutions instead of quick fixes at the lake.
So as a reminder, this is a study that we partnered with. It's about a 5 to 6 year effort. We've engaged some of the best lake scientists in the state and in the country to help us work through the scientific aspects of how the lake works and why we're getting the algae blooms that we see and what we need to do to them so that when we bring back the solution, we've got good confidence that any money spent on upgrades to wastewater treatment or stormwater treatment or other projects will be will work. We understand that on the political side, spending money and then not seeing a result quickly can be very, very much challenging. So, we've been working through the science. This will be our last field season. So I told them no more, we're not going out anymore. At the end of this season, we're now wrapping everything into our analysis. Let me just run through kind of where things stand. Our goal is to be fully completed by 2023-2024 timeframe to take this. Okay, so just as a reminder, this is the process that we're working through. So we have a 16-member steering committee that Eric and I co-chair. And that steering committee sat science panel of 10, as I said, great scientists from around the state and around the country. They've been contracting with researchers largely in Utah to do the field work, and then all of those studies roll into recommendations that will come through the steering committee back to the Utah Lake Commission. Should there be a Utah Lake authority, and the authority would take this this role, then those recommendations flow to our quality board, the legislature, and then EPA has to approve any new regulations with respect to the Clean Water Act. I keep making this plea. I know it's taking a long time, but science, good science takes time. We want to get it right and not fast. Not only one of both. But we're going to choose right over fast in this case. So we can all continue to be patient for that. Last year, the big effort was the steering committee putting together water quality goals, management goals that are specific to the 3 different uses with aquatic life recreation and agriculture. You guys had that presentation in the fall and in our last. last meeting. We're happy to share it with anybody who doesn't have it. Those who say little informed basically be the foundation of what comes back to us as the scientists. We want you scientists to tell us how to achieve these goals. And then just a reminder that ultimately this is a policy decision. We'll be setting new numeric nutrient criteria, which is a regulation under the Clean Water Act. And yes, it is a science-based criterion, but there is a policy element there. Science never gives you one answer. Science gives you lots of answers and a range of uncertainty. And this is our most recent numeric criteria development effort was for our headwater streams, our most pristine streams in Utah. It took us about 8 years. And you can see these are all the lines of evidence. This is what the science gives you. There's no right number. And so somewhere in this red box is the regulation, and that becomes a policy decision. So that's where we'll be bringing that back to this body and other policymakers. We want you to be engaged in helping us weigh how much uncertainty we're willing to accept, how much risk we're willing to accept against how much cost we want to take. So quick research update on the science. So the charge from the steering committee to the science panel was basically, what is the historic condition of the lake? What is the current state of the lake with respect to nutrient cycling, algae, and ecology? What additional information is needed to develop criteria? And then ultimately, is there an improved stable state that could be reached under current water management and fishery management scenarios? So really one of the key questions we've asked our scientists is the best outcome for Utah Lake that we would leave the ecology as is and just reduce the prevalence of algal blooms, the magnitude, the frequency of those blooms. Or you keep hearing about that Utah Lake used to have a clear water state with, you know, macrophyte dominated. The question is that even a possibility? So we've asked our scientists to answer that question.
Do they believe that's, like, is that a Jim Bridger tale?
So you need to recall the answer to that. But if you look at there have been paleo studies that show that definitely the lake used to not be algal dominated, it was plant dominated. And that does support more of a clearer lake state. We're not known for Lake Tahoe. This is not a deep lake, never has been a deep lake. It's a shallow valley bottom lake, right?
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, no, certainly the paleo studies show that there used to be a lot more macrophytes, emergent plants around the edges that supported a different fish population and a clearer water state.
No, that makes sense. But we could see the bottom and it was top of my. I worry that the definition of success where, you know, where it comes short.
Well, you know that was that 200 years ago. The ultimate question is can we? So these are some of our ongoing studies. I'm just going to run through some of them really, really quickly because we are starting to see some results that are informing the way we're thinking about Utah Lake. So the first one was a nutrient-water, sediment-water nutrient interaction. So this is trying to understand are nutrients moving from the sediment into the water column or vice versa, or are they cycling back and forth? And the short answer is, for the most part, the lake is a sink. Phosphorus. So about 90% of the phosphorus that goes into the lake doesn't come out the Jordan River, stays in the lake, and most of that's captured and kept locked up in the sediment. It's actually quite the service that the lake's providing to us. Given the loading that we have, we would expect the lake to be even worse with respect to algal blooms if we didn't have this. The bioassay studies was done by Dr. Andrew at BYU. Basically, he took containers to put Utah Lake water in all of these like chemical milk jugs and then added and subtracted different ratios of nutrients to see how the algal populations responded. The short answer to what was found here was that both nitrogen and phosphorus are driving algal blooms. Both are important. They differ in terms of when they're important and where they're important. And all of that detail will be incorporated into the lake model. We have a project looking at the budget, the carbon, nitrogen, and phosphorus budget. This is how much is coming from natural sources, how much is coming from wastewater treatment plants, how much is coming from stormwater, how much is coming from atmospheric deposition. So that is on track to be completed next week, and they'll be presented to the sites panel. We just contracted this year with another new professor at BYU, Dr. Josh Lamont, looking at the phosphorus binding. So after that sediment water study we did, there became a lot of questions about the chemistry of the sediments. We do have a lot of calcite chemistry in this lake. It's quite different than what we see in other parts of the country. So we want to make sure we get that piece right in terms of predicting how changing nutrient loads will have a response. I mentioned the paleo studies, so Dr. Brady from Utah State University, Dr. Brothers, and Dr. Power from the University of Utah basically went out to the cores throughout the lake, and they're analyzing those cores to look at changes in nutrient flux, nutrient concentrations, as well as the ecology. So what did the algae look like 300 years ago? What did the plant's ecology look like 300 years ago? And how has that changed over time? You can just see, even just visually, you can see how the sediments have changed over time in some of those forests. We were hoping to have this done, but the pandemic, the lab that we used in Canada, was shut down for the entire pandemic. So we're behind January. We're now moving into a littoral sediment study. So a lot of questions have been raised about how nutrient fluxes are different and different around the edges of the lake. So as the lake goes up and down, does that mobilize or does that allow the sediments to become a further sink of phosphorus and nitrogen? That question has been raised multiple times, largely by the treatment plants. We're going to answer that. And then atmospheric deposition study, Wasatch for Water Quality Council, which is the group that represents the largest wastewater treatment plants in Salt Lake, in Utah County. They're looking at how much phosphorus is coming through, basically from wet and dry deposition. Then Tippecanoe Special Services District, that's the large sewer district in the northern part of Utah County. They're doing their own study to look at alternatives to restoration and better understanding how carp influence some of the ecology in the lake. We're making sure to wrap all of that into our study as well. And then finally, all of this gets synthesized into a watershed and a lake model. We're about to issue a contract to a consultant to take all the research that we've done and package it into a model so that we can now move forward with scenario modeling where we can look at ask the model questions about should we reduce nutrients, how quickly are we going to see recovery, how much do we need to reduce to see a certain level of recovery, and how do we handle growth. So the next phase will be looking at this scenario modeling implementation efforts. I've presented this before, but basically we expect to come back to you with a non-cartoon version of this graph where we give you multiple scenarios that have both cost associated with them, projected time for lake recovery, a projected magnitude of lake recovery, and uncertainty that's embedded in each of those scenarios. And then ultimately that's a policy decision that we'll do together. So we'll have to evaluate these trade-offs with respect to costs on the infrastructure side, and then the benefits, obviously, with respect to water quality, public health, the fishery, and recreation uses.
So honestly, could not be more impressed with how Erica did summing that up. I've attended some of the science panel meetings for the water quality study, and those researchers are brilliant, and it often goes over my head personally. So I was really grateful to be able to listen to that at the meeting, and we wanted to share that as a way to help residents of the valley and visitors to the lake understand some of the research that goes into that. Now, if you want to learn more, obviously this episode is being published in November, so this was several months ago, so there might be more information out there, as well as how the study continues to progress. You can visit the State Division of Water Quality's website for the water quality study, and we will have that link in the show notes of the podcast. You can go onto that website and see the membership of the steering committee and science panel. You can see the reports that are being made on these research projects, and you can also see the schedule there for upcoming meetings if you'd like to be able to attend online or in person in order to learn about this great effort to provide a comprehensive solution that takes care of the lake long term in reducing nutrients at the lake. We want to thank all the partners, DWQ, the wastewater treatment plants, Central Utah Water, and so many others who are a part of this study and are working together to try and find the best ways to protect Utah Lake for years to come. Thanks for listening to Utah Lake Facts, Fiction, and Fun. If you enjoyed this episode, please make sure to subscribe so that you can receive notifications each time an episode comes out on Thursday mornings. And if there's something in here that you feel you can share, please post the link online, share with your friends, so that everyone else can also learn about the facts, fiction, and fun to do with Utah Lake.